Who knew the door into television was through a babysitting job?
Because I had known Mark Pearson since I was a little girl. I used to babysit Mike Pearson, actually, and his sister Katie, and Betsy was just a baby.
Hello, I'm Paul Yeager, and welcome to MTOM, where we meet the people that bring you the public TV show Market to Market. We talk with producers, analysts, and those behind the scenes to learn their backgrounds and the role they play in the program. Laurel Bauer has produced hours of television in several documentaries involving the Iowa Classic 6-on-6 girls basketball and the farm crisis of the 1980s. But she got her full-time start on Market to Market. Hearing her name for the first time on television was special.
I enjoyed it. I grew up watching Market to Market. My dad and mom watched it. We were farmers. So was married to a farmer. So it was pretty exciting for my family. That was kind of always my goal at Iowa Public Television, was to go to that unit. It was kind of like a dream come true to hear my voice and to hear my name.
To hear Mark introduce you.
Exactly. Yeah, because I had known Mark Pearson since I was a little girl. Used to babysit Mike Pearson, actually, and his sister Katie, and Betsy was just a baby. So I knew him for a long time, followed his career, and he actually helped me get a job at Iowa Public Television. And so it was really fun to work with him and the others in the unit and to be a part of Market to Market.
How is it that your two families knew each other?
We were both on farms near Thayer, Iowa, and he actually worked with my mom at Southwestern Community College. So the two of them got to know each other, and we realized we lived really close to one another. And so he just had my twin sister and I babysit his kids when he and his wife, Eden, would want to go do something on a weekend. And we remained close from that point on.
What was Mike like as a little tyke trying to babysit him? What do you remember?
He was a really sweet kid. He was not a troublemaker. Betsy was a baby, but he and Katie were really fun. Sometimes my sister and I would babysit together, sometimes separately. And Mike was a sweetheart, really. I mean, they were good kids, and we enjoyed playing with them.
Now, you went to college to do this type of industry. This wasn't something you just kind of, give her a job and she'll work her way into it. You went and studied to do TV production.
Correct. I went to Drake. I graduated from Drake with broadcast news, thinking I was going to go into the news realm. But I knew Mark Pearson. I volunteered a couple of state fairs for Iowa Public Television. And he said, would you want an internship at IPTV? He got me on with the Student Voices program that's no longer around, but a long-time running kids show that we did some decades ago. Feels that long sometimes. And I never left. They asked me to stay on, and I just kind of worked through different units and worked to market, and now concentrate on documentaries.
Now, your work, do you remember what your first Market to Market story was?
Oh,
or even
boy.
Some of the first few, maybe even the first trip that you did?
Yeah. I don't know if I can remember the first story, but some of the first trips I took were out west, and they were a Hispanic winery in the Sonoma Valley. Was one of my favorites. And I think one of the first ones I did was about wild horses. And another interesting story I really enjoyed was a two-part series with Steve Carnes, a videographer here at Iowa Public Television. We worked with the Navajo in Arizona and in Canyon de Chelly, and that was a very eye-opening experience.
In what way?
Just learning about their culture and living on a reservation, what that's like. And we traveled like 2 hours to get to our hotel. I mean, it was a very remote shoot and long days, but an extremely interesting project.
Do you remember other trips that you'd gone on that were as impressionable, or was that one kind of sticks in your mind because that was one of your first?
I think that one sticks in my mind, although, I think one of the best things that I, at least for me, for working on Market to Market was to work with Mark Pearson and then Mike Pearson before I transferred units. But was traveling all across the United States. I've been the East Coast, West Coast, Upper Midwest, clear down South. And so I think that's left an impression on me that I really, because of this job, have been able to see the country and how people farm in all parts of the U.S.
Other stories that stick out from your time?
Let's see.
I mean, there's always there's a big list of Laurel's greatest hits. We have them on the wall.
Well, I try to think if any of them stick out.
Who was your boss? I mean, who hired you? Who when you came into the unit, who was the boss?
Sid Sprecher.
So Sid Sprecher was.
And then John Nichols immediately after. So, so he was my boss, and I had known him on different projects at Iowa Public Television. So it was a thrill to finally be in the unit and to be able to do those kinds of stories.
So you're working with Mark, working then with Mike, but before Mike comes into the full broadcast picture, you've already mentioned you grew up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of that growing up translate to the work that you did on Market to Market?
Yeah, I think that, you know, growing up on a farm, it always meant a lot to me. I loved our farm. I loved being outside and loved animals. And we did struggle during certain times. And I think that was what I wanted to focus on for Market to Market were people stories, stories about farmers across the United States and what it means for them to be a farmer and their experiences. And so I kind of focused on probably more people related stories just based on my love of agriculture and that type of life.
At what point do you start going, you know, there's enough people stories, struggle. Hey, wait a minute. There was this thing in the 80s called the farm crisis. When did that start to kind of come together in your mind that it was something you were going to do?
I think it really came into my mind when I started with Market to Market. I always felt when I came to Iowa Public Television, it was a story I wanted to tell because my family did experience a farm crisis during the 80s and we barely survived. And I remember then that it had a deep impact on me, and but especially watching my mom through that time period. And so I think when I got to be in the unit with Market to Market, I really thought this is what I wanted. I really want to tell this story. So kind of started talking to people, managers, and it took a few years, but it was something that I felt strongly about and was able to kind of pitch and get others on board. And working in Market to Market, I knew that we had this library of footage from that time. I mean, the show had been doing weekly stories about the farm crisis, and so we had this wealth of information to use for it.
You had, you talk about your mother mm-hmm. a little bit on the farm. She was one of the, I won't call it a narrator, but you used some of her journal entries mm-hmm. in the crisis. Did you have to sell her hard on making her a part of this?
No, I think it was hard for her to share her journal entries because they were very personal. They weren't just, you know, a list of her day. They were very thought out. She expressed her emotions at the time, but, when she knew why I wanted to use them, like to really get to the heart of how people were feeling during that time, she was very supportive. But it was hard for me to go through them and to read because you're a little kid and you know that something's not right, but you're not really aware of how bad things were and how much stress your parents are going through. And so, but they really helped me write the script, really get to the emotion of that time period.
How many pages was that script the first time?
Well,
I remember it being fairly long.
Yeah, my scripts are always long, but I don't know how many. I mean, it could have been up to like 40, 50 some pages.
Because you're trying to get to about 25.
Yeah, or even less.
Right? Or even
less? Yeah. And it could have been more than that. I mean, I often just kind of throw my thoughts out and then with people's help, you know, script write or other script writers here really condense it down. So, it was extremely long to begin with because there was just so much information and really, I can't even think of an interview that wasn't good. I mean, they were very good. So going through those transcripts, it was like, you know, which ones do I leave out?
And through our Market to Market classroom project, the farm crisis, the way you've parsed it out into several portions or parts, it's still one of the most popular things that people go to and view and watch. And when John and I or Dave and I now go and talk to classroom teachers, ag teachers in Iowa, we usually go see them in the early summer, and we tell them about this classroom unit, and we say that we have this farm crisis portion of the classroom. They all say, absolutely, we need to have it. We need to tell our kids. We make sure that they watch that. What's that like when you hear that?
Oh, that's great to hear. I'm glad that it lives on. You know, I think we often work on a project and think once it's been broadcast, it's kind of done. But I think as market-to-market stories are like this and the farm crisis story, they do live on. And especially with agriculture, and that's one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to do one about the farm crisis, is we can continually learn from those stories. I mean, right now, agriculture is pretty tough. A lot of people in my area are selling cattle or getting rid of land because they're just not making money. They're really struggling with prices currently as they are. And so I think we can always continue to learn from such stories. And I'm glad to hear that young people that may be interested in agriculture, you know, think, because they're too young to have been there, but they need to think about that.
It's not going to be $8 corn, and that's not going to last forever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because that's what all of a sudden you were dealing with there. As at the time that you were getting ready to start put this together, we were the farthest thing from a crisis.
Exactly. And so, you know, I thought about that when I was putting it together, but I do know that, as we all do, agriculture is in cycles. I mean, it may be a long time before we hit another bad time, but we already have now. And I don't know what the future looks like for agriculture. I'm sure it'll improve at some point, but it could be a while. There's so many different factors. And that's what I wanted people to understand during the farm crisis, too, is how some of those things can begin to fall apart.
Do you look at today's aspects? You're not quite on the day-to-day grind of the farm, both personally and professionally, so you don't quite see it as much as you did. But do you ever, we have people ask us, do you think we're headed for another farm crisis? Are we?
I worry about it because I think people get pretty heavily leveraged still today. And that was one of the biggest problems during the 80s. And I mean, there were many factors, but you know, I worry about people in my area that have a lot of land that they're renting or that they bought at a high price, and they're heavily leveraged with, let's say, farm credit or whoever that they're getting their loans through. And I don't see how you can make money that way with the prices currently and then the cost of inputs. So it is concerning to me. And I'm not a part of that as much anymore day to day, but I'm around it just because I live in a very agricultural heavy area.
Besides all of the jovialness that goes on with the market to market folks, what do you miss most about hanging out with us? Or do you even miss us?
Yes, I do. I do miss market to market. You know, it was really hard for me to leave the unit. I wanted to concentrate on working mainly on documentaries, but I do miss market to market. I miss the people that I worked with. I think all of us brought something very unique to the show. We all had kind of our, like I was a people related. Some people were more issues or more environmental. So I think we all worked really well in bringing kind of the whole story of agriculture. And the camaraderie that we had, and you still have, I can hear it. And that's fun. It's fun to hear because it was a very fun unit, like to discuss politics and issues and keep up with the news. And I miss, I do some traveling now with my documentary work and I continue to do that, but I miss the agricultural stories, you know, that focus because that's what I grew up with. And I mean, it's changing every day. There's something interesting. And I hear about some of the stories all of you are working on and think, oh, or I'll see something in a magazine article I just saw the other day. And I thought, oh, that would have been a good market story that I need to pass on, you know? And I'm like, well, I can't
do it. You don't
have
to pass it on. We can maybe make the arrangements to send you out if you so choose.
Yeah. So, but that's, yeah, those are the things I probably miss the most. Yeah.
And the thing that I think, I'm so glad that you're doing here right now is the laughter that you have when you would, you, 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 you over laugh sometimes at a bad joke of ours, and you give us confidence to keep going. So I'm glad that you at least can still laugh a little bit.
Oh yeah,
and people
yeah.
can hear you laugh.
Yes,
because
well,
always,
thank you.
That was always fun to hear.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Your interviews, when you talk about these documentaries, mm-hmm. the long form. I mean, an interview sometimes is 30, 40, an hour sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
One of the ones that at the time that you're doing it, you have no idea what's coming down the pike, but you were the last long-form interview that we have of Mark Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one, I mean, you talk about it. I mean, people have sat in that chair and, you know, we've had to stop recording because a lot of our analysts that remember Mark and knew him from the beginning. To know that his family was able to see that and, mm-hmm. and you were able to see it and all of us, that alone probably had to be very rewarding. I guess I don't know what the other word would be for it.
Yeah, it was rewarding because I remember that day we were on Mark's farm where he and Eden lived outside of Winterset. And it was a long interview because Mark brought so much to that story. I mean, he had been a broadcaster, also a farmer himself. And he had worked on a daily basis with these people. And then being a part of Market to Market was after that time. But he was in some of the old footage in his other lines of work. And so it was rewarding to know that one of the last long format interviews with him was done by me for our unit, for Market to Market, for the Farm Crisis Project. And I'm glad his family has that because he really did an excellent job in describing that time period.
Now, you've done other interviews with people and other documentaries, one that you have moved to and already through here at Iowa Public Television is The Farm Her. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Well, it was a Market to Market story that someone I knew had kind of given me the idea. Actually, a former colleague of ours, Jennifer Confirst, knew the woman who was taking photographs of farm women. And so we worked on it for a Market to Market story. It was pretty popular. And I was asked by managers to put it into a documentary for our pledge for festival. And so that was a lot of fun to work on because we traveled all over the U.S. And I like the focus of farm women because, you know, working even on the Farm Crisis Project, women have been and will always be an extremely important part or sometimes at the forefront of agriculture. And these women all had very unique stories to tell. And so I was glad to have it become a longer piece. But it started with Market to Market.
Now, this was with Margie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time you were traveling for this documentary, and you were out in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was you and Rick Fuller.
Yes.
And it was an early morning call, maybe in Montana?
Yeah, Montana.
And you were supposed to be going from one place to another, but the people you were going to go see said, don't follow your GPS or something
yeah.
like that? What happened on that trip?
Rick and I were just talking about that the other day when we were working on another documentary we're doing. And we were laughing because it had been raining in Montana. And the she lived way outside of, I can't think what the town is now, but far from one of the main cities that we were staying in. So it was quite a trip to get to her farm. And the roads were muddy and really, there isn't a good road out there, but she had warned us about one in particular and said, don't use GPS. But I can't remember if I didn't have her directions or if we just were kind of lost because we had followed her out there once, but came back in the dark. And so we took the road that she had specifically said not to take. And we realized that halfway down the road. We looked at each other and said, this is the road that she told us not to take. And it was a muddy mess. I mean, we're lucky we got through it. I mean, I was driving and I had the gas floored and we were barely moving. And we were laughing because it was like, well, I guess we'll be walking somewhere because there was no cell service. So we couldn't have reached her. We would have been walking miles and miles because the farms are so spread out. So we were very fortunate, but it was just funny. Both of us at the same time were like, this is the road she warned us about.
From the way Rick tells the story, he's like, Laurel, floor it, floor it.
And
you're like,
I am. Yes, I said I am, and we're not. It's like going through cement, but we made it through somehow. I don't know how we did.
Are you driving a big Suburban at
yeah,
this time?
Yeah, yeah, we're
and
driving
it's
a big.
It's full of equipment.
Yes, yeah, it's a rental. It's full of equipment, so we were in a huge mess if we would have gotten stuck. Like I said, I don't even know how long it would have taken us to find transportation to get us out of that mess. But yes, Rick did say floor it, and I said I am. So it was a very funny moment, a good story to always tell now when we lucked out. So,
had you ever been stuck like that before?
No, although when Steve Carnes and I were in Arizona on the reservation, we were in a really muddy spot. We didn't drive. We actually walked quite a ways with our camera equipment. And there's pictures, and I think Steve still has them, of us walking through the mud, and we're carrying the tripod and the camera. I can't remember what we were doing or why we were going through this mud patch. But, I mean, we have mud up to our knees. And I think all of us from market to market can, you know, talk about a project where you were a mess when you got back, or your shoes were destroyed, or tires. I mean, rental cars, I'm sure they didn't appreciate us returning them.
Because from my understanding, Rick basically threw the keys at the rental
he
place
did.
When you got to
yeah,
Montana.
We didn't wash. We did not wash the vehicle, and so I'm sure they didn't appreciate us much. But
yeah. I told Rick one day, I said, in fact, when we have him in on this, I'll again, probably go back down the line of, yeah, I know somebody in Hertz rent a car, and they heard that there was this regional convention, and there was this story about some car found in Montana that was full from mud up
yep.
to the gills. And all the agents said, which one? You know, like so many people had
oh, experienced that.
Type of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you do the Farm Her documentary, mm-hmm. travel around, and you did the farm crisis. But another one that I want to talk about is your 6-on-6 girls basketball.
Mm-hmm.
In
mm-hmm.
Iowa, we were a unique place until 1993 when we stopped playing three girls against three girls on each side of the court.
Right.
You played mm-hmm. the game.
Yep.
Is that another one of those stories you brought in the door saying that you wanted to do?
Yes. Actually, a colleague of mine, Andrea Coyle, and I both played towards the end. I graduated in 91. She was 92. So we were towards the end of it here in Iowa. And so we both for years had said we need to do something about this. And so when we began the project, unfortunately, she had to work on another project here for the station. But yeah, since I had played, my mom had played, my grandmother could have played. It was just a story, as you mentioned, unique to Iowa. So much support for Iowa girls athletics that it was a story that had to be told, and it was extremely popular. I mean, people can of all places can relate, especially smaller towns. I mean, some of the bigger cities like Des Moines, they don't have that feeling for 6-on-6. They didn't play it, or they may have started it later, but most of them didn't even play it. It was the small towns that really were a part of that story.
We still play the documentary on IPTV
yeah.
from time
mm-hmm.
to time. And there's a game that's featured in it, which in Iowa is considered one of the greatest mm-hmm. games, if not the greatest game ever. It's coming up. 50-year anniversary will be next year.
Wow. Yeah.
Of the, let me get this right, was it the Everly Cattle Feeders?
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
the Union Witten.
Oh,
I can't remember
what they
was,
were
but it was
either.
Denise Long versus...
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but it's one of those games. It'll be the 50 years since
oh
that
my
game
goodness.
Happened.
I can't think of the other
next
woman's
year.
Name. But yeah, that's hard to believe. Wow. Because when I interviewed him, but it's been a while since the project was on or the program was on, you know, they seem pretty young, but that's amazing. And I wish I could think of the other woman's name, but. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Escaped
I like
my
to
brain.
Put you on the spot. I'm trying to give you all sorts.
Yeah,
of
but cool I interviewed ones. Both of them, and they were great women, and had great memories of the time, and it was a joy to work on. Just be kind of like the farm crisis, because it was something I personally had experienced, and that made it easier to really get to the heart of the story for each of those. And like I said, small towns and the love for their girls and the game really shined in those in that documentary.
What other documentaries had you worked on? Let's wait to hold on before you get on what you're working mm-hmm. on, but what else have you worked on?
The first documentary I did also was agricultural related, was a photographs from an Iowa photographer named Pete Wedick, and he worked for the Farm Security Administration, and they are just wonderful images of farmers right around the Great Depression, a little bit before, a little bit after. And I just fell in love with those. I didn't bring it to Iowa Public Television. I don't really know if his family did or how they got here. But when I saw him, I asked for, I think, a year if I could work on it. And finally, I was assigned the project. And that still holds a dear place in my heart. I became very close with his son, Bob Wedick. We wrote each other letters for years. And they were just really great images. People felt so comfortable with him as a photographer of farming during that time. And kind of reminds you of like Dorothea Lange, but they were happier moments. They were people working, but happier moments, maybe not so sad to look at, but just captured agriculture very well.
And then there was one I think about, was the One Room School?
I didn't do that one.
Well,
no.
That was about that same time,
yeah,
right here.
Yeah, it was done similar time.
And then you had, and I think it was it after 6 on 6, before Farm Crisis, or maybe it was after Farm Crisis, was your KMA radio.
I didn't do that one.
You didn't do Homemakers either?
No, Deb did those two.
Oh, it's just Deb. That did
yeah.
It. Okay, I was thinking
yeah.
You had done.
No, another one I did was about the Adair County Free Press, the Seide family,
right.
Hugh
okay, that's
and Ed
right.
Seide family. Longtime newspaper guys, Hugh Seide worked for Life and Time magazines, was kind of famous in his lifetime for working with presidents. And his brother Ed ran the Adair County Free Press they had it in their family for over 100 years, and it has since been sold to another company. But so it was a great story about newspapers and the family and what it takes to run one and what it means to a community. And then there's been other, I did one about Century Farms. another one kind of about a photographer of small town life. It wasn't just agriculture. And then a couple others that I'm not thinking of now.
But, and so what's the future then?
I'm working on one about George Washington Carver. It was not an idea that I came up with, but actually the station's been working on it for quite some time. Funding was an issue, personnel, people leaving. Unfortunately, someone passed away that was going to write the project. So many years later, we're starting it up again, and I'm just beginning production, the going out production. We just returned from a trip to Diamond, Missouri, where he was born and spent until he was about 12 years old. And we'll be going to Tuskegee, Alabama this summer. So, but that's another agriculture-related story as well. But I think more so about perseverance and how a black man born a slave was able to accomplish something. He died in 1943, so it was a very, pretty much through his whole life, a hard time for a black man, but he was able to persevere. So I think that'll be an interesting story, too.
You always have such uplifting material.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
How you laugh, I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes it's not so funny. But I think within those stories, you find, like him, perseverance. You find people who overcome things. And in the farm crisis, although some stories ended very sad, some, were able to make it and move on and are farming today. So,
most ideal project you would like to do yet? Funding's not an issue. Time is not an issue. Staff is not an issue.
I have two projects. One I have proposed here. Two, actually, both proposed. I'd really like to do a story along the Mississippi River, kind of all the way up or from the beginning to the end, about how that life has changed along the river culturally, agriculture-wise. But it would be a very expensive project. And I know you said if I didn't have money to worry about. There was a book written called I can't think of it right now, but a woman, after I had come up with this idea, she actually had the same thought. And so I think it might work well together. She's a National Geographic photographer. So that interests me. Living in Iowa, we're surrounded by rivers rather than the ocean. And so I think the Mississippi River is always an interesting tale to tell. And the other one is not so probably is one of my other kind of sad, but I think it's an important story to tell, is why so many veterans are committing suicide. I really want to do that story. It would be a tough one. And I don't know a lot about the military. I have a nephew that was in the Marines. He's out now, but he never saw combat. So, but I'm always coming across newspaper articles or a story here in Iowa that a veteran has committed suicide. And I would really like to get at why that's happening.
And then find out where Jimmy Hoffa was buried.
Yes, exactly.
That's the last one.
Yeah, that's the last one.
Yeah. All right, Laurel, have you thought of anything else on your market-to-market days that you want to tell the audience? You're just glad it's in the rearview mirror.
No, that's not true. I miss it. I'm kind of one that has to kind of – that's why I like documentary work. I have to change a lot, move different places. I don't really move up here. I just kind of go from one unit to the next or one project to the next. And but I do miss market to market. I miss the stories. I miss the people. I miss I think it's one of the closest units here because you're working together every day. I mean, you may be doing your separate stories, but it's probably the most cohesive unit because the rest of them were all kind of all over the place. And that's fine, too. But there is definitely a camaraderie there that isn't in other units. So
we'll try to keep the noise level down.
Okay.
Now, who are we kidding? That never happens. All right. Thank you very much, Laurel.
All right. Thank you.
This is a production of Iowa Public Television. Send us an email, markettomarket@iptv.org. Please tell a friend you heard this podcast. We sincerely thank you. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.